This is Report to Wyoming.
I'm Colby Fedor, and in this episode, I talk to Tina Hobel-Heinrich. She is the president and CEO of the Casper Area Chamber of Commerce. The chamber's mission is to foster a vibrant and thriving business community. Their vision is to elevate local business through collaboration, advocacy, and education. So we talk about all that and more. I think Tina is just a bright and caring person. When you get to know her a little bit better, it's obvious that Tina loves serving others. So she's always a wonderful person to get to talk to. I hope you enjoy. I was looking through some notes before you got here. I love the archived picture of entering Casper, oil capital of the Rockies, convention city, and then my favorite was Gateway to Sportsman's Paradise. Stop at the Chamber in all capital letters. And so it really shows you how important chambers have been historically to Casper specifically, and what a legacy we have. Do you want to start there?
Yeah, I think that that's really true. You know, I've been really blessed. My career in chambers is only two deep. You know, I was at the Cody Chamber for 7.5 years, and now I've been here for 2.5. And both of those chambers were started in the 1900s.
Wow.
So Cody 1900 and Casper 1903. So, you know, there was a thing, you know, back at the turn of the century where, and this is going to sound sexist, but it's the honest to God truth, where a group of businessmen would get together and kind of solve community problems. That's really how chambers of commerce started. Cody's chamber started as a hunting club. Buffalo Bill started.
Oh my gosh.
And just has morphed into this connector of business.
I think it's cool how civically minded people were. They certainly didn't have to do that. That wasn't their responsibility per se, but they felt compelled to do it.
Yeah, I think that that is something that I hope we're going to see a resurgence of. And, you know, to that end, this was Casper's first year to host the National Civics Bee. So we hosted that in March. And the person who won our Civics Bee here locally went on to the state Civics Bee that was the 8th of August. I went down for that just to kind of support our kiddos. Three of the four finalists were from Casper. I thought that was so cool. And the girl who won here won the state tournament as well. So now she's off to the national tournament. And that'll be in the fall. And it's just so exciting. It's an opportunity for her to win $100,000.
Wow.
For her college fund.
That would be
cool. I mean, can you imagine for your little ones, have that socked away? And I think she's in the seventh grade.
Good indicator that maybe that's a direction she'll end up heading in down the road. We need people like that.
Yeah, she's an impressive young lady just in terms of public speaking and confidence. And she's got a lot going for her. But those civics questions, they do multiple choice answers. Those are hard.
I was going to ask what kind of questions they're asking. Because I can think of a spelling bee. So civics is like...
I mean, they're asking like treaty questions and questions about the Monroe Doctrine. And I mean, they were not easy. So I didn't even get 100%. So I think I got in the 10 rounds, I think I got 17 out of 20. But it was... Yeah,
I want to start studying up on this.
It's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us probably could learn a thing or two. And one thing I've noticed is a lot of people will weigh in on council happenings, especially when we were partnered with Oil City. They've got Tommy Culkin usually goes to those meetings and takes very good notes and publishes what's happening. And people weigh in on them, and it's sort of given me a glimpse of how easy it is to criticize without knowing all the context. And I'm not picking on our listeners or anything. It's shown me how hard it is to stay abreast of what's happening and to really see how these meetings are layered conversations that take, you know, it's almost like doing your homework. Being informed it's difficult, even with press helping and publishing their notes.
Yeah. You know, it's something that my dad used to say all the time, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And so it really is. And, you know, I had to put my money where my mouth was this year earlier. You know, there were some things that happened when we lost our Delta flight And I had served on the Fly Casper Alliance, had volunteered my time there, was really passionate about air service. And so when the opportunity for airport board positions came open, you know, I had a friend call me and say, you have to apply. And so, you know, I went into the interview with the commissioners and I just felt like I didn't have anything to lose. You know, I would have loved to have served. And so I just kind of put myself out there, told them what I thought. And now I'm serving on the airport board.
Oh, wow.
And okay. So it's daunting. I mean, you're drinking from a fire hose to learn everything about an international airport so that, you know, you can weigh in on things in an intelligent manner. But yeah, you have to be willing to step up. If you don't like how things are, run for office. Because that's one of the things that social media just makes me crazy. Everybody can be these keyboard warriors, you know, and say things that if you had to say that to my face, you wouldn't say it in that manner. You know, right. And it's so easy to misinterpret people's comments and, you know, put our own kind of feelings into what they're actually saying. It really is, in my opinion, one of the things our society is going to struggle with.
I agree. And I think, well, I think having a Chamber of Commerce is a really good starting place for the informative and educational piece and the media. And so doing what we're doing, podcasting. I know I got a crash course in MRGs when all of the stuff was coming up at the airport and there were some requests made that I think, long story short, correct me if I'm wrong, the city and the county ultimately agreed that they would cover the costs of seats that didn't get paid for the Delta flight.
Yeah, so that, I mean, minimum revenue guarantee is a whole other ball of wax. So airlines fly at risk. If the flights are full, they're making money. It doesn't matter. But for an airline to come into a market that isn't filling flights, they have to have what's called a minimum revenue guarantee. So that's how those at-risk flights have always been. Mm. The difference is, post-COVID, we're not selling as many seats yet, you know?
So this is really Delta going, do we want to risk?
Delta won't risk it.
Okay.
You know, they won't risk losing money on a flight to Casper. So
gotcha. They
have a minimum revenue guarantee. So if we don't fill the planes to whatever capacity is in the contract, then yeah, we have to backfill. And it's very interesting how that works. And oddly enough, you know, after we lost our Delta flight, enplanements at the airport just keep getting bigger.
Mm.
And
I see those releases from, is it Januska? I can't remember.
Glenn
Januska, thank you.
Yeah, so enplanements are fantastic, and there's some amazing things going on at the airport. They're actually going to be our speakers at the September lunch for the chamber luncheon. So, yeah, they'll be talking about everything that's going on there.
Okay, that's very exciting, and I plan to be there. It's just good to hear what's coming up, what's on people's, what they think is important.
Yeah.
I always like to go, okay, here's what I think's important. And that was last year, I think, at the luncheon is where I started to learn more about the discussion about where the big state shooter complex was going to be. And Casper was, people really wanted it in Casper.
Don't ask Tina a question because you'll get her honest opinion. I still think it belongs here. I think geographically it just makes more sense. And I came late to that committee. So I wasn't part of the committee that drafted the original proposal. But when we found out we were Final Four and we were with Cody, you know, having just come from Cody, they asked if they could pick my brain about, you know, the shooting complex. And I can remember sitting in that meeting and I said, so what is the point of the state giving this $10 million, you know, to create a shooting complex? And they said, well, it's for economic impact. You know, we want to be able to have these big competitions here. And I said, so bring revenue into the state. And I said, so really what we need to do is drop a 200-mile radius around all four of the finalists and see where we're going to keep the most revenue. So Gillette bled into Rapid City, Cody almost completely into Montana. I can't remember where the third one was. Oh, Cheyenne, maybe.
So Colorado.
Colorado. But in Casper, all but, I mean, like a tiny little strip that bled out, all that revenue was going to stay in the state. So if you're doing something for the purpose of economic impact and keeping money here, that should be the focus on where you put it, right?
That's a really good argument, yeah.
And so it just makes no sense to me. And I fell in love with shooting in Cody. Before moving to Cody, I was not a gun owner. And now I own several. My son and I belong to the shooting range there. He learned to shoot trap and skeet and shot through the 4-H club on weekends in the summer. So, yeah, it was an amazing experience for us. So I get it. They do have the museum there. That's an amazing resource. So I get it. But if your purpose is economic impact, put it where it's going to make the biggest bang for your buck.
I know there are a lot of, you know, particularly business leaders who agree with you. And so I can see how networking, there's power in numbers. And so when it comes to making a plea for things like this, it helps to have a chamber where people are coming together and discussing the best way to do that collectively.
Yeah. So, and that really does tie into our government affairs committee too. And so, and that's where my passion really lies. So I was the state lead ambassador for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network for 5 years. So did a lot of national lobbying for cancer issues and was really proud of that work. But, you know, it's understanding that you have to be willing to make your opinions known and to make people understand how important issues are. And so when I came to Casper, I started up the Government Affairs Committee again. It had been dormant for a while. And so we have probably 15 to 20 people now who come and we talk about what's going on at the legislature. We talk about what's going on nationally. We have been talking about the manufacturing, the small nuclear weapons manufacturing that, not weapons, reactors that is hopefully going to happen in Barnum. But we just have been talking about a lot of those things and, you know, making sure that we have cogent arguments about why that's important to us.
One thing, and I hope this isn't too off topic, but it's fresh on my mind. Yesterday, I interviewed a gentleman about, we touched on Radiant briefly, and he seems to think public perception is good, although he couldn't really tell me how he knows that, but boots on the ground going to those meetings, there is a lot of genuine concern and fear coming from the people who live here. But I get the sense it's not if, it's when. Like, this is something that's already, it's happening. There's a lot in place. There's really no stopping it. It's not something that we can go backwards on. So I'm just wondering, too, if you think that, I think a lot of people want to speak up when it's too late is what I'm driving at. And yeah. By the way, I am very optimistic about, I don't need to put my personal opinion in here, but I am not someone who is opposing this. It's just something I'm noticing is that people are showing up and wanting to protest, but it seems too late to me.
Yeah, and I don't know that answer, honestly, if it is too late. But Wyoming is, you know, we just hosted U2025 last week, the Global Uranium Symposium. And when I say global, it was no joke. Mm-hmm. We had people from all over the world come to Wyoming for that Global Uranium Summit. So in terms of what our state offers, we do offer uranium. Uranium mining is going to be, and rare earth minerals is going to be a huge industry. Especially when we stop buying uranium from Russia.
Yeah, it was fascinating, that conversation I had with him. Wyoming, I don't think it can be understated, is supplying 80% of the nation's uranium. However, we're not a huge player when it comes to the global market for uranium. The United States, you know, Kazakhstan supplies over half of the uranium. Other countries like Canada, it's close to, I think, 18%. I'm not positive on that last one. But they produce the second most in the world. So
difference is the importance really comes, though. You know, Senator Barrasso was co-sponsor of a bill that will force the United States to use its own uranium. So we were importers of uranium, and so now we won't be able to buy uranium from, like you say, Russia. So, yeah, I think when we have to use our own, the market shifts.
In some ways, I think the conversation's been, like, slow going. And as someone who works in media, I'm ready to start moving past the, hey, this might be a thing that's happening. We're going to start seeing some pretty big changes. And how do you, at the chamber, start to have those conversations with people and prepare for, like, hey, there's gonna be some really big, exciting, hopefully, things happening? And how do we harness that, I guess, for the greater good?
Well, and honestly, I think there are really big, exciting things happening already that you can just not be aware of. I had a member approach me in January. So our business-to-business expo had kind of run its course, and we had decided to not move forward with that this year. And so I had a member approach me in January about doing a safety expo. And I was like, you know, I know Workforce Services does some stuff with safety and workforce development, so that's kind of partially covered. But there is not a manufacturing and safety expo in the state. Huh. And so, you know, manufacturing, there is a lot going on here in Casper. My salesperson, Jerrica, had said, hey, I got an invitation to this open house, and she ended up not being able to go, so I went. And, you know, I walked into this building off of Zero Road, and it's like, I had no idea it was there, number one. Manufacture these huge, like, hubs for generators and construction, and I was just blown away. I was like, how do you know that? You don't know what you don't know. And when you see Shane True talk about or bring in coolers or, you know, the Wild Gear mugs that... those are made here.
Yep.
And then
they're
Josh awesome. Kalinowski, his chili dips now are made here. Mm. So he won the startup challenge last year.
This is ice baths.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. I've seen this. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, and they're made right here in Casper. But, you know, we have a lot of what people assume is oil field manufacturing and components and all of that. But it's a lot deeper than that. So we are really excited to be hosting that in October. So it's going to be the 15th through the 18th at the Ramcota. And so, you know, the hope is to start a little smaller this year. And then next year, you know, our full intention is to take it to the Ford Wyoming Center and bring in national vendors.
That would be really cool. And even, it, you know, for just entrepreneurs in general, it's about safety, but it's an opportunity to network, ask people how they did. How'd you do that and pick their brain about becoming a business owner? But also, how do you take an idea and make it actually happen? And
yeah, I love that Advanced Casper still does the startup challenge here locally.
Yeah,
I think that that's important. And I know it's a lot of work, and it's a heavy lift for them, but I'm super grateful that they do it.
So that's a lot of momentum moving forward. We've got a lot of things coming up. Do you want to talk about what's on your agenda, what you think are the most important things?
You know, I think that we just have come really far, and it's been a sprint, definitely, to get to where we are. And so what I think I'm really looking forward to is just continuing to network and really getting more comfortable here in Casper, continuing to meet people. And, you know, everybody when I moved said, why would you leave Cody? And I'm like, now, why would you ever leave Casper? Everyone has been so welcoming here that you just have amazing people that live in this community.
Yeah, I've been here 3 years, and I agree. Moving from Bozeman was a little bit different. I am a Wyoming girl at heart. I grew up in a small town in Wyoming. Moving to Casper, at first I didn't know anybody, and I was like, I don't know about this. But now it's been 3 years, and I'm like, Casper is awesome.
Yeah.
It has everything that I want here. It's not crowded. Like,
yeah.
Bozeman had gotten, we call it Bos Angeles.
Yep.
And I still love Bozeman and Montana, but it was getting from my house to campus would take half an hour. And I love that I can be at the base of the mountain and zip down by the river in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, Casper is really, that outer road is a genius thing. So I spent 25 years in Great Falls, And we needed that southern arterial, you know, where you mm-hmm. could zip from one end of town to the other, and they just have never done it. So to come to a community that's like, yeah, let's put that in, it is brilliant. I love that. Because you can. You can just get across town and lickety-split. It's amazing.
Also, the arts and all the things that yeah. we have here, if you love sports, there's something for everybody.
Yeah.
The Nicolaysen Art Museum, I've become a really big fan of, and they're doing mm-hmm. a thing next week, and I'm so excited to go because I know it's going to be really, really cool. Artists are going to be there that they'll be dressed to the nines at the gala yeah. and the bash, and I'm excited to be a part of it and get to take photos. And so, yeah, Casper's really grown on me too.
So I think as the chamber, I think we still, you know, need to learn how to tell our story better. You know, I think that in terms of new, younger entrepreneurs, when I started at the chamber in Cody, we did a survey. You know, one of the questions was, why did you join the Chamber of Commerce? And the most common answer is, that's just what you do when you own a business. And that mentality doesn't exist in the younger generation. You know, that because we have so much more available to us digitally, mm-hmm. needing that physical place like the Chamber of Commerce as a connector, people don't think of that, you know. But we are so much stronger together. And so we need to tell our story. You know, we need to continue to work on our relevance. But the bottom line is there has to be something in it for members to join, right, and to renew. And for new members, it's not a feel-good thing anymore. Now we have partners like Town Square and K2, and now I think we have a billboard company that offers, I'm pretty sure it's Lamar, that's offering discounts. So you join the chamber and you're immediately connected to marketing, you know, TV, really a way to get your business out there. And with some pretty heavy dollar discounts. It's like $1,500 off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was looking at some of the things that you guys are offering. And you have a podcasting room now.
Yeah, we do.
We should. Okay. I need to do a podcast in your podcasting room.
You know, you're welcome in my podcast room anytime.
Oh, I'd love to just check it out. I think we want a new podcast room downstairs that's a little cozier. So I want to see what you guys have going on. So maybe we should do one there the next time we chat.
Well, Eric Lindemood used to do his podcast here.
Yes.
And now he is using our podcast room really regularly. So to do the Wyoming Business Spotlight.
And so, again, you don't know what you don't know. Like, I just found out about that. But for anybody starting a new business, it might be cool just to have that as a resource to be able to go and use that.
Yeah.
But I also think about what you just said. It sort of reminds me of that ask not what your country can do for you, but we can do for your country. I think there should be some altruism. Like, I do think maybe, and I'll just give a tiny little lecture, I think that people should... It shouldn't be all about what can I get out of this, you know? It's like, what can you offer? And I think, and that's been really on my heart lately, is like, wow, people really can affect the change that they want. And it starts with being more informed and having conversations. And that takes some vulnerability, too, to be able to say, I don't know everything.
Yeah.
Talk to other people that you might think of as competition, or people can get pretty competitive in the entrepreneurial space, for example. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't. No. And I think of, you know, so many times people in the same industry, it's not competition, it's collaboration. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to do this. How can we work together on that? You know, working on the Manufacturing and Safety Expo, I contacted two consultants here locally that do safety training, right? And the first response was, we work really well with them. You know,
wow,
we kind of nice both have our specialties and we work really great together. And I was like, that's really where it's all about, truly.
Right.
So there's just some misconceptions about chambers of commerce. People think that they're part of the city or the county. We're not. We're a 501c6 membership organization. We do not get any funding from the city, from the state, from the county. Our funding comes from fundraising and our members. And so it makes it really easy for that to be our priority. You know
right.
what I mean?
I think that's good to point out because it's not, you're not dealing with taxpayer money. There's no, that your agendas are going to be a slightly different. And I don't think that our county or city has any nefarious plans or anything, but I think sometimes people do think like, oh, if you stand to profit from this, then why are you making those decisions? And it's like, if these elections are coming from a place of just wanting to help build the city's economy and good things for Casper, I think that's important to know and think about.
Well, and I think, you know, the other bit of misconception is, why should I spend my business resources when you're getting taxpayer money?
Right.
Right? Yeah. So
I think that's a misconception.
Yeah. I think that it's really important, you know, for folks to understand the funding streams and that we are membership based. So our members, this business community, is our priority. And so when the rubber hits the road, that's what we stand for.
And I think that it would be cool to see people just being proud to be members. You know, it's
yeah,
like,
and we have very proud members. Don't get me wrong, Colby. We have members that have been members, you know, for 60 years.
Oh, wow.
It's just that kind of loyalty is so incredibly humbling.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe in what the chamber does. They understand what the chamber does and they see what the chamber is doing. So I don't want to discount that kind of loyalty because it does exist here in Casper. I would love to have that same sense of inspiration. And I don't know, I guess maybe it's my failure. I'm not sure how to communicate that to new entrepreneurs. And to younger business owners.
I think just having these conversations is good because it's like, again, I do think there's this, well, what do I get out of it kind of sense? And there's a lot of things you can get out of it, but also you can be a member of the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
So the other thing that we're seeing a lot of, and I think if you wonder how relevant Chambers of Commerce are, start paying attention to how much internet fraud there is. So there is a push in Cheyenne to, you know, talk about retail theft. I think it's much bigger than that. We have so many corporations that are incorporated in the state of Wyoming, and I bet we get 5 calls a week at least from somebody from out of state saying, I just got one the other day. A gentleman called me and he said, I'm about to send this guy $5,000 for a pontoon boat.
Oh.
Can you tell me if this business exists on 2nd Avenue or 2nd Street North? And I said, well, there is a business out there that, you know, has a similar product line, but it's not that business. And so I physically got in my car, drove out there. The address that they had listed didn't exist. I called the number. Was not anyone local. And I had to call the guy back and say, my research says don't send it. This is a scam. And, you know, the heartbreaking ones are, we had a gentleman call from Tennessee, I think, and he had wired $10,000 to a mobile home manufacturer. He even told me the model that he had purchased. He'd wired them $10,000, and he said, they're supposed to be in Casper, and I wired the down payment, and now they won't return my calls. Again, the address was fake. The phone number was fake. So one thing that the chamber absolutely does is give your business instant credibility. You know, we vet our members, and you can apply for a membership online. If it's not a local business in our service area that we can verify, we don't accept them. You know, it's just mm-hmm. that simple. So the concept that we could in some way, you know, help fraud to exist or, you know, to grow is horrifying to me. But with the internet and so many businesses are just plain fake. So when you need to know, you know, if the business is real, who do you call? You call the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This has been so insightful. We're at 33 minutes. So I feel like we just scratched the surface, but I know I get to talk to you.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.